This week on Chicago Beer Pass, Nick and I talk about Pseudo Sue, and we open up some Guinness Milk Stout. All that and more on this week's episode.
Yeah, because, you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley. I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? It's what you think it is.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw!
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Hey, I'm Nick White.
And we've already got our beers poured, and we've been drinking them already. We used to start drinking before we would record.
Yeah.
We'd like almost have a beer before we get into the show.
Yeah. This is it's going to be a feel good episode, man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we're drinking this 4-pack you brought in, this Toppling Goliath Pseudo Sue.
Yeah, man. So this is out of Iowa, Decorah, Iowa, wherever that is. So this is the hazy Midwestern pale ale, you know,
okay,
that everyone's talking about. Yeah, so this just kind of leads into our events this week, the recaps, because Pseudo Sue launched in Chicago this week.
Okay,
so
just Pseudo Sue,
just Pseudo Sue.
Okay,
yeah, and it was funny because they were saying, like, you know, even the distributors didn't know that they were gonna get Pseudo Sue until like 72 hours before the event, you know?
Uh huh,
yeah. So Pseudo Sue is a single hop. Showcase Citra hops, yeah, and like a 6% pale ale, basically.
But they're not brewing it at their brewery in Iowa. They're brewing it in Florida, and then it's coming back to Chicago.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic. So, like, Toppling Goliath is in Iowa, and the Field Museum is the only place you can get Pseudo Sue, period, right? In cans or in draft. But yeah, like you're saying, the drafts are coming from Decorah, Iowa. And since they don't have a canning line, their cans are coming from Brew Hub down in Lakeland, Florida.
Okay, so then do they brew it in Florida too, or do they brew it in Iowa and ship it and then can it? And seems very inefficient.
No, they're brewing it in two locations. Yeah, and you know, the guy, Clark's his name. He's like a super cool guy. He's saying, like, hey, have some patience with him. You know, he's gonna have like this state of the art, you know, German brew house built in Iowa. But until then, he's gonna have to brew cans down in Florida. This is the same place. It's like a contract brewery, a state of the art contract brewery. High Hali, the IPA from
Hali. Yeah.
That's probably not what I said, right?
You said a lot of other. Yeah.
They brew it at the same facility now.
Okay.
There. Yeah. So he's like, hey, man, you know, yeah, it's going to be slightly different, but have some patience. This is a stopgap till we get our thing rolling.
So the cans are different than the draft, then?
Correct. Yeah.
Seems horrible marketing, right?
It's super weird, man. Like, it's something I haven't heard of before. Like, hey, you know, we're going to make the same beer, but it's, you know, it's going to be intentionally different, you know, in different formats, you know. So, I mean, it's an interesting beer, man. I like how it's like, you know, it's nice and hoppy, but then it does a good job of like not lingering really at all.
No, it finishes very clean. It's kind of, it's on the sweeter side, but not like overpowering sweet or sticky or anything. It's just kind of bright and almost like fruit sweetness, I want to say.
Yeah, like somewhere, I'd say I put this beer somewhere between like Zombie Dust and what's the Chicago Pale Ale from Revolution? Fist City.
Fist City, yeah.
I'd put this like right between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, it's a little juicier than Fist City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because.
Or not Fist City, Anti-Hero?
Yeah, Anti-Hero is juicier than that.
Yeah.
Fist City is pretty juicy, pretty sweet. You know, it's got really, really ripe fruit notes on that one.
But you were at an event for the beer at the museum, right?
Right. So apparently the museum does this monthly series called Hop to It. And this is only the third entry. The other two have been off-color beers.
Okay.
Wari and Tooth and Claw. Tooth and Claw is their Bohemian Pilsner, which is the only one of the three that sold out, apparently.
Okay.
Was Tooth and Claw.
I went to that event while ago. I think it was like 3 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah, so. Quite a bit of time. And then Wari, I think, is the one where it's a sour, it ends up being a sour ale, but it's modeled after the Chica beer, which is a beer that, you know, they literally grab corn and then they like
spit it
into it like a jar.
I remember seeing the when Dogfish Head Sam Calgione had that show,
Brewmasters or something.
Yeah, one of his episodes was going and brewing the Chica beer.
He's got his whole crew. With like
spitting and stuff. Yeah.
It's wild, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are two events. And then, you know, the Toppling Goliath guys kind of see it as an opportunity to like bridge beer and tourism, right? So like he's like, this is his play all along, you know, even with like the Great Taste of the Midwest. You know, he says sometimes he sends kegs there before he sends them to Des Moines, Iowa, which is his biggest city.
Okay.
Right. And then he's like, he's got this partnership. So hopefully trying to get some synergy where folks coming to Chicago to see the museum, you know, would consider maybe coming out to his facility or at least being more aware
in Iowa?
In Brand, yeah.
No one even, I'm sorry that no one thinks about going to Iowa.
I've never been to Iowa.
I've never been to Iowa either.
Maybe. I was the next state over.
Yeah. I forget where it's at sometimes. I think of Idaho sometimes. I'm like, yeah. But
that's where you get too far, man.
Once
I get past Aurora, that's it. That's the edge of the earth. Aurora is the edge of the earth for me in a car.
But why Chicago then with this beer? Why not focus on Iowa?
That's an interesting question. I think like, but he's got like such a cool buzz around his brewery and around these beers that it kind of makes sense. It's like we talk about the 12% distribution model, right? Where they're like, you know, hey, you know, even these breweries that are super small, like All Color and Mars, you know, they're taking their beers and they're specifically going to accounts in different cities. Mm-hmm. You know, even though they're small, it's like an alternate approach.
And do you know how long Toppling Goliath's been around?
That's a good question. No,
I feel like they have the same like kind of recognition that maybe Sun King does from Indiana. Like for some reason, I think of those two breweries like the same. Like they had this like cult following for a little while and people talked about their beers and then they kind of just started doing a lot more and not faded, just kind of refocused.
Yeah. This beer has been around since 2011.
Oh, okay.
So the story goes that, you know, they had this beer called Tsunami Pale Ale and the brewmaster wanted to just kind of make some improvements on it. And then they said, well, just make a completely different beer. So he took that recipe and just kind of adjusted it, right? And they didn't really have a name for it. So on the wort tank, he just wrote the name Pseudo Sue, you know, as abbreviation for a tsunami.
Okay.
You know, and then it ultimately, he liked the way Sue looked, you know, in the font. You know, Pseudo Sue looked cool in font. And then his mom's name is Sue.
Okay.
Clark Louis. And then they all had a thing for dinosaurs anyway. So he's like immediately, you know, when he started playing with the name Pseudo Sue, the first thing he thought was, hey, what kind of dinosaur designs can I come up with?
And is he from Chicago? They would know Sue? I feel like why would you know the dinosaur Sue if you're not from or
no, that's come like to a Chicago? Big, that's like a big thing, though. I thought that's like a global attraction.
It is?
Yeah, because it's like, know. You know.
I'm here, so I feel like I know it. But does someone else know it?
No, for sure.
All right. So,
so Sue is like, so 1990, the lady who discovered Sue, if you can discover a 70-million-year-old dinosaur.
I found this thing that's been here all along.
It's been here all along. So they named it after her, right? Yeah. And her name was Sue. Yeah. So they were saying like, hey, man, this is how our relationship came to be. We dig dinosaurs anyway. The guys, Field Museum reached out and they fell in love with the Field Museum crew, so they're actually going to make beers going forward in collaboration with the crew.
Oh, so Off Color is out, Toppling Goliath is in. No?
That's what it's weird because it seems like this whole story sounds like the Off Color story from like 2 years ago.
Right.
Right? And I'm like, I don't get it. But no, I think they're just going to go side by side.
Okay.
You know, I think this is their way of building their craft portfolio, the Field Museum is. Right. So the next entry in this Hop To It series is going to be two brothers, something called the, I wrote it down, something about curiosities. Like okay. The,
makes sense.
Yeah. Something, okay. Something about curiosities.
Huh.
Yeah. Oh, but Breakthrough is a distributor.
Okay.
And Breakthrough is that collaboration between Wurtz here in Chicago, and then a distributor called Sunbelt in New York.
Okay.
They joined forces. So this is the same crew that brought in, like, Deschutes, Almanac, Cascade, Buckle Down locally.
Yeah, they distribute up in Wisconsin. They distribute Two Brothers and Solemn Oath.
Okay.
Spiteful is going to sign with this distributor.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. So seems like they got a good portfolio there.
Yeah, for sure. So this was a good event. I mean, it was a fundraiser. So, you know, we were expecting other beers, like, you know, because there's a King Sioux, and then there's this Assassin, apparently.
Yeah.
And then there's KBBS that are, like, have really high street value. But, yeah, this was really just a showcase for Sioux.
And so they didn't have any of those.
Drunk, no. Drunk Sioux was there. She's, like, this dinosaur with, like, the pseudo suit t-shirt.
Yeah, I thought it was just going to be some lady. Like, oh, yeah, Drunk Sue showed up again. Classic Drunk Sue.
Liz Garibay from History on Tap. We actually did an event with Liz once. It was like a beer history dinner thing. She did the history part. We talked about the beers over a dinner at Whole Foods.
Okay.
And oh, but she's got this project called the Brewseum. So apparently they're going to do no location yet, but it's 2019 is the schedule.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, the Chicago Brewseum.
Because the George Lucas Museum was going to it was the one that was going to be that museum in the by the lake. I think they were putting another museum.
Yeah, you're right. That was the Star Wars Museum.
Yeah, so it's going to be that, and then it was going to become the beer museum, but I think now it's not. They changed locations.
Yeah, apparently the Lucas people pulled out because friends of the lakefront said, hey, you can't have this parking lot where the Bears practice. where Bears parking is.
Yeah,
the Bears
something
game.
Like that, yeah.
You can't have this parking lot. And then it would have had to have taken one of the buildings from a Corning Place.
Uh-huh.
And Friends of I think it's Friends of the Lake, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That, you know, it's not a perfect group. They're like, no, you can't have it. So he split and went to L.A. Dude, I think that was stupid. Like, seriously.
Probably.
Star Wars Museum, a George Lucas Museum. And you know, it's not like, all right, so if there were a stadium being built there, but and a baseball team, basketball team, whatever, usually they make the taxpayers pay, you know, for that construction. But he was coming in with like $500 million of his own cash to put into that thing. And they still said, no, we need this 3-13 football team we got, we need parking for them. And no, you can't have it, George Lucas.
Lucas, yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous. God, you got me fired up, man.
Damn. You had so much to say about Star Wars. I didn't take you for that.
So Liz wants to do a museum that has a brew pub on one floor, artifacts on levels 2 and 3, and then a rooftop beer garden.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to do that. So she made a speech about that. And then there's a curator for the museum who came out and talked about, like, the history of hops and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And, you know, he was teaching the crowd, because this is mostly, like, museum members. You know, we were talking about, like, how, you know, most hops, 700 AD is around the time hops were used in beer.
Right.
And prior to that, there were things like, you know, for flavoring, there was like, you know, the foraging kind of stuff that, like, scratch
bark,
does.
Bark, yeah.
Yeah, like bark, shrooms, sorghum, honey, pepper, that kind of thing. They said the oldest plant on record to be used in a beer were figs in Israel.
Okay.
Yeah. They had some, like, brewing equipment from Iraq that was, like, 2,000 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely cool. I mean, especially, like, because we were talking about, you know, Hunapu Day, you know, and we were talking about all these events coming up. And so it was exciting to have, like, a wintertime beer release that gave you a chance to get to the museum and, you know, party a little bit and get ready for, like, upcoming events.
Nice.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty good, yeah. I haven't been to the Field Museum, I think, since that Tooth and Claw event. So, yeah, it's always a good time. I think they have another beer event that it's been on or off.
The Chicago Beer Festival.
Yeah.
That's going to be there.
Okay.
It was at the Great Hall in
the Union Station.
Union Station.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look for that. Did you make it anything else then besides this?
Where else did I go? Oh, I went to Chicago Athletic Association for the Mitten Cocktail Competition.
Okay.
It's actually called Stone Fence. Did you know Stone Fence? Apparently Stone Fence is like a thing. Like it's a classic cider cocktail. I wasn't aware of this at all. Yeah. So it's got, you know, some like bourbon and, you know, cherries. And yeah, everyone makes their own variant of it. Sort of like 12 Chicago restaurants that came out and they had a cocktail competition using the Mitten from Virtue.
Okay.
So this was a launch party for that, basically.
Oh, I think was Ken Honeymeter there?
I saw Honey Money there, man.
I feel like I saw some Snapchats or something from him drinking some Mitten.
Yeah. So Ken was there. I saw. Well, Greg Hall was there. Obviously, Greg Hall I was gonna call it a brewery cidery. It's his cidery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, I got to meet Sophie.
like
the actual person.
The actual person, Sophie.
Okay. Not just like someone dressed up in a Sophie bottle.
No, not like
cosplaying.
Not like a costume of a Sophie. But yeah, so like, you know, I think because it's Greg's daughter is Sophie, and then Greg's son is King Henry. So I see this kid, he's taking cameras, he's got the Goose Island, you know, work shirt on. I'm like, and he kind of looked Greg Hallish. I'm like, what's the connection? He's like, yeah, that's Henry, that's King Henry.
Oh, funny.
So it's pretty cool. It's almost like seeing like comic book characters or something, you know,
okay,
to
yeah.
life. It was cool. And John Hall was there, you know, it was cool. So the Mitten is their bourbon barrel aged cider. It was in 12-ounce bottles this year, 4-packs.
Right.
Prior to this, it was in large format bombers.
Right. Yeah. I think they've now switched over to a lot more smaller packaging, and I would not be surprised if we see AB push them into cans.
Yeah. It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because they're the most recognizable ciders are probably Angry Orchard and the Totally Roasted guys up in Michigan.
Vandermill.
Yeah. And they're in cans.
Yeah.
And then Vandermill's killing it in cans. It absolutely makes sense.
Everything needs to be in cans right now.
You know, for
if
sure.
If you're not in cans, you're not making it.
So this was a solid event, man. So it was in Stag Court, which is on the 8th floor of this hotel, right? And then, I think the winner of the competition was Longman and Eagle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they had the best cider cocktail.
Dude, and they were pouring it out of a gigantic old granddad bottle, which was
so old granddad.
Old granddad is the whiskey.
Oh,
old granddad.
Okay.
And then the old granddad bottle's in a rocking chair, so every time he pours the cocktail, he's like leaning the rocking chair forward with the bottle in it.
Yeah.
It was super cool, man.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, I dug this party because of the backdrop. You know, first of all, it was a Sunday night. But then Chicago Athletic Association used to be like this, you know, this good old boys, like private club.
Yeah.
Right
downtown.
Pretty
run down, too.
Yeah, it was run down. So then they revamped everything. So you're on Stag Court, which is a real basketball court, but you can tell it's been outfitted for events. But, you know, everything's been updated, like the floor, the rims, everything mm-hmm. looks brand new.
Yeah.
And then so we're chatting up the crew there, and they're saying, like, you know, this was a private club, and even the wives weren't allowed to come to the club. So one day, some of the wives started taking pictures from across the street because they want to know what their husbands are doing.
Yeah.
And then they're like, that's enough of that. So then the very next day, he ordered that all the windows be taken out of the entire building.
Whoa.
So that the wives couldn't, like, you know, spy on them and see what they were doing.
So are there no windows?
So there's no windows at the Chicago Athletic Association.
I feel like when I went in there, because I've gone to the bar that has, like, the lookout there.
Cindy's,
yeah. A couple times.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like walking in there, and I'm like, man, it's real dark in here. Like, it's weird. It's, like, super gothic, like, old, just dark and kind of creepy.
Yeah, I think other than the rooftop and the first floor, obviously, all those other event spaces, like, you know, the game room, Milk, the Cherry Circle room, you know, all those places are all windowless.
Whoa.
That's wild, right?
That's
it's kind of funny, too, man. Like, no. You don't need to know what we're doing.
We don't know. You don't want to know what we're doing.
Really?
What kind of weird stuff are you doing there?
What the hell's going on at this point?
Yeah, what was going on that they didn't need to let their wives know what was happening? That's creepy, too.
So the winning recipe, Longman and Eagle, they called it the Stonebridge. It had the Mitten in it, Koval rye, some mezcal, you know, apple cider vinegar. Some toasted honey molasses.
Okay.
Oh, but then they took your whole glass and they put like this gel. It was an apple cider, like salted caramel coated gel on the side of the glass for presentation. And
okay.
I think that's what set them over the edge. People were going nuts over their stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. That was a good party.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, Chicago Athletic Club, if you haven't been there, go there. Go to Cindy's. Beers are pretty expensive up there.
Yeah.
So... And food, I've never eaten there. I've seen the menu, and it's kind of ridiculous. But go for the view, share a beer, take a picture, and just kind of check it out. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a hotel, and then there's like 3 or 4 different bar concepts in there that you'd really dig.
I've only gone to Cindy's.
Yeah.
So. You make it anything else then?
No. I ran into my buddy Josh Riley from the Bourbonnais. He's down in Bourbonnais. He came up for Chicago Ale Fest at Navy Pier. He said... Goose, man. Goose brought the thunder, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they brought a vanilla rye from 2014.
They have an insane amount of beer that they don't tell you that they have.
Right.
They just have all this beer.
Right. Ombre Secreto.
Is it even 2014
I think so.
Rye?
Or yeah.
Vanilla.
Bourbon County Vanilla Rye.
Does that even hold up? I know my...
I'm curious.
Yeah.
I had a Vanilla Bean Dark Lord for Friendsgiving from around the same time, and it was really the best beer of the night, like no exaggeration.
Okay. Maybe the vanilla... It was really good. I guess vanilla is not going to fall out. It's probably just going to kind of hang out there, maybe fall to the bottom, but if you kind of swirl your glass
around... Give it a swirl. It'll be mellow, but it'll be there. I think it'll still be there. This was really prominent with beer, with vanilla.
Interesting.
Dark Horse brought Plead the Fifth. Apparently, he had some real heavy hidden beers there. Because you can get to a festival where, like, if everyone's bringing their mainline stuff, and then there's one monster beer, you know, that's hard to get, you'll see an insane line.
Right.
They were saying there's a nice balanced attack of really good one-off beers there.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
That's good to hear. Because that was last weekend at Navy Pier. That was a Josh Segoe.
Yeah, Josh Segoe production. So apparently he has a hit on his hands there.
Nice.
Yeah, and he put all the suburban breweries on the upper level, like almost on the deck. So you got the main floor. And, you know,
I didn't know there was like a deck.
I didn't realize there was a deck there
I've
either.
Only been there where there's like one floor.
It was one big floor.
Maybe there was an upstairs. I felt like that was where people went to the bathroom.
Yeah. But. So yeah. So I look at Josh Segoe, man, repping the Burbs.
He's damn.
The Burbs had their like exclusive little like suburban level apparently. Yeah, it sounded like a good time. I'm kind of jealous now that I didn't go.
Yeah, I guess I should have went.
Yeah.
I mean, well, should we jump into some stuff happening this week?
Yeah, let's do that, man.
Cool.
Let's start on Wednesday.
All right, so Wednesday, February 1st.
Jesus Christ.
January's done. I'm just waiting for the winter to end.
Yeah. So it's a new brewery night at Dry Hop.
Okay.
Yeah, new-ish. Because Miskatonic has been around for like a year. Mm-hmm. But still fairly new. Also, Hopewell, Low Res, On Tour, and Winer. All in the same spot at Dry Hop Brewing for their new brewery night.
Nice. I need to check out this On Tour.
Yeah, I mean, this is moving so fast. I think it was the Hop Review guys that put out something that said, you know, 65 in the city, 105 in the burbs, brewery count.
Okay.
And it's like, well, some of that stuff was like, you know.
Back in my day, there was like 12, and three of those were Goose Island.
Right? Yeah, right? It was this goose, and there was that goose. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
So. All
right, so that's Wednesday over at Dry Hop. You can try a lot of these new breweries, kind of get a taste of what they have to offer.
Yeah, and it's a pretty slow weekend, man. I think we're taking a dip. And the next weekend, things pick back up, you know, Cider Summit, Dogfish Head's having a takeover in downtown Chicago at Franklin Tap.
Okay.
That sort of thing. That Dogfish Head thing ought to be nice. All the classics, 60, 90, 120 minute, Worldwide Stout, you know, all the beers that they've been making for a very long time, very well. So
yeah. I know there's a lot of people getting out drinking in general for the ACLU Drink for Good hashtag on Twitter. Did you see this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of breweries coming together to like donate money to ACLU based off how much you drink.
So the idea is, I know I saw John Lafler's tweet and that one got shared, but for every beer many of these brewers are drinking, they'll donate $1 to ACLU. And in someone like John Lafler's case, he drinks a lot. So, yeah.
He could single-handedly make change happen.
Yeah.
John Lafler.
In my case, it's like, so whatever they drink through now and the end of February, mm-hmm. Mine would be like $50, maybe $100 at the most.
Dollar, yeah.
$1 a beer.
That's fair. Yeah. Damn, that's a lot, though, still.
Yeah, but yeah, 50, you're drinking one and a half a night kind of day kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
So that's going on. So you can go out and drink and, I don't know, support that in a way. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I think it's a good way to just say or make a difference or feel like you're kind of doing something, right?
Give you that I made a difference feeling
in your
life. I made
a difference, but I just drank a lot. Don't worry. I got trash tonight, but I donated $10.
Yeah.
I guess the way to do it, right? Like, if you're looking to save money or donate, take something that you do all the time. Be like, every time I, you know, go to the bathroom, I donate $1 to this. It's like, I have to do it.
It adds up.
Yeah.
it adds up, for sure.
But yeah. I think that kind of bleeds into our beer news, right?
Yeah, for sure. So this week in beer news, Food and Wine Magazine. I don't know if that's a magazine I get to too often, but they compiled a list of the 25 most important beers in American history. Craft beers. The most important craft beers ever brewed.
In history.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we got on this list?
Let's see, man. So let's start with the you know, the people picking the list, right? Yeah. So they found 14 folks. A lot of them are peers. You know, this is your current Ken Grossman's or, you know, the Craft Brewers Association, you know, these kind of guys, you know, guys who make beer or are in beer associations.
We're never asked.
Yeah. We need to change this to the Chicago Beer Pass Association.
Yeah.
And then we'll get the food and wine invite.
We should just be making lists, man.
I got a list. I got a list on list. Ooh. You know, I still need to put out that top five list that we talked about like a year ago now. Oh, all right. So listen, we won't go through all 25, but let's talk about number 8, which was Three Floyds Dark Lord.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of what they were saying was that, you know, it kind of, Dark Lord is probably like 10 or 11 years old now. And it kind of, it brought in that era of the ritual big beer pilgrimage that you had to go to, the big bottle release, you know.
Okay.
I think they kind of like set the tone for that kind of monstrous release weekend, right?
So more what the beer did than the beer itself, right?
I would say that.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Let's say yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's definitely part of it when you talked about it. I mean, the beer itself is always like, you know, it's highly regarded with regard, you know, for like ratings.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is the only day you can get it is that day. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that definitely plays a part into it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. The only brewery to have 4 entries on the list was Anchor.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, the only brewery to have multiple entries was Allagash. Allagash had 2. Allagash White and then one of their sours. Anchor had 4 on this list, so...
I didn't know Anchor had more than 2.
You know the Christmas Ale, and then Steam. You know, and Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah. But apparently Liberty Ale, which is, you know, widely regarded as like the first IPA, basically.
Okay. Right?
You know, like 30 years ago. And and the Porter.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Anchor Porter, yeah.
Yeah. When I was talking to Greg Hall from Virtue Cider, who, you know, well, Greg created Bourbon County Stout, number 3 on the list, but, you know, now he's doing Virtue. And they interviewed him for this, and he said, hey, he actually included, on his personal note, he included Bell's Brown Ale. Because he's like, you know, hey, you know, back in like 88, 89, when Goose just got started, we would always go to Sheffield's, and that was one of those beers that was just like a consistent go-to all year long, you know?
Right, yeah, so. And there's like now there's nobody that makes brown ales, so.
Yeah.
Around, you know, just having something to have dinner with, that beer is great.
That's important. You know, that gets overlooked, man. I think the approachable beer that you can, that's awesome on its own, but also doesn't, like, that you can actually have with a meal, that gets overlooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also asked Greg, just on a side note, I was like, was there ever any thought about, like, you know, getting the band back together? Because, you know, like, all right, we sold Goose Island.
Yeah.
We're going to chill for, like, 2 years, and then we're just going to start another brewery.
Right.
You know? And he was like, nah. We always wanted to do something different, and we saw this as a chance to do that.
Okay.
I think he said around the King Henry time, he was like looking to do some different stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So that sucks. And in my head, that's totally what they would do.
You thought they'd come back together.
They would all come back together, and it would just be a different name, and they would just do the brewery again.
Yeah. Yeah. We're Bruce Island.
Right? So top 3. Number 3, Bourbon County Stout. Number 2, Boston Lager. Number 1, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Yeah, I would say that Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, I remember drinking that many a times at bowling alleys.
Yeah.
Like that beer was on everywhere if you started drinking craft beer, what, 10 years ago now?
Yeah, yeah, and this is 1980 when that beer came out. And yeah, they all, when you talk to brewers, they all point back to that beer.
Yeah, that kind of.
It's just like a watershed moment.
It
yeah.
set the stage. It was like. I think it made, if you saw people ordering that at your bar or bowling alley or whatever, you're like, oh, maybe there's something to this and I can get something like this and charge more than I'm charging for this Bud Light.
Yeah, I think if there's something to be said about a beer that inspires people to start breweries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is definitely one of those kind of beers.
And start drinking other craft beers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I would say go check this list out. I learned a lot about beers I didn't know nothing about on this list. So that was actually a good read from the folks at Food and Wine. Yeah. Rate Beer, their annual awards were recently.
Okay.
Yeah, so every year they do a list of, like, you know, the best brewer in every state, the best brewer, the best beer, and then the best new brewery.
Okay. This is the same list that probably set the stage for Pipeworks. That probably...
Yeah, because they were the best new brewery.
Helped Pipeworks become the brewery that they are now.
Yeah.
I would say.
I would say so, too. Yeah. Let's see. We'll just stick to Illinois for this list. Best beer was Bourbon County Stout. Best brewery was Pipeworks. And
Adam loves Pipeworks.
Oh, yeah. Adam is, yeah, he's the rate beer, like, admin or something, at rep or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I like Pipeworks, too.
Sure. And now the cans are... very solid.
Yeah, they're very solid, and then they hit you with a wide variety of releases.
Mm-hmm. And the quality should probably get better with Claudia there,
right?
So
you know, rocking the quality control, the QC. Hubbard's Cave, I think, is the Unani side project.
Wait, he's got a side project?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his side project is Hubbard's Cave.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it, like a sour?
It's a good. I've never had a beer from them. I'm not even really clear on who they are.
Because his brewery, his new brewery, just opened.
His
tap room opened this week.
Yeah, in the North Burbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of news related too. So Hubbard's Cave, you think, is his side project?
Yeah. Should we look it up?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, his new brewery opened. He has hours. He said seating is pretty small in there, but. I may have to go check it out. I forget where it's at. I want to say it's Elgin for some reason, but I don't think so.
It's like just straight North Burbs, like you know, like Niles, something like that.
Okay. Which is great to see because I know he was brewing not too far from Goose Island for a long time there, and it was kind of a makeshift brewery. In some degree, and it was cool to see him like come all together. Jerry over there.
Yeah. Hubbard's Cave looks like, even on Beer Advocate, it was just added last year.
Okay.
Or 2015. Nothing but IPAs and stouts.
Oh, okay. Because Unani is all, what, Belgian Saison?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Exactly.
That style.
Like pretty much Belgians and farmhouse ales.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Hubbard's Cave's Twitter feed is kind of nondescript. Just kind of says we're in Chicago.
Okay.
And we're dropping off beers here and there, right? We're dropping off beers at this bar, that bar. Huh.
Man, I think you could just open a weird, random brewery like that, and Rape Beer or Adam might be like, I like what these guys are doing. Best new brewery.
Best. Yeah. But yeah, it sounds like it's the IPA stout project of possibly Unani.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to stick to that. I feel pretty good about that.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Let's see. I ran into Michelle Foyk at she was one of the judges for the cider competition.
Okay.
At the Stone Fins competition. So she announced that she's got a brew house that used to be like a mosque. Used to be a mosque. So she's gonna be on the northwest side. The brewery and cidery is gonna be called Eris.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, you gotta tell me about that. Like, what is that? She's like, well, Eris was the goddess of chaos. And I was like, That's dope.
Definitely anti-beer, anti-alcohol.
I think it used to be a mosque.
Okay.
I think it's about to be a brewery.
Damn, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah. And then so she announced this week that Haley Shine is going to be the brewer over there.
Okay.
So Haley is the current brewster at Rock Bottom Chicago. Okay. So her resume includes... a JBF win, a World Beer Cup win, and two wins at FOBAB.
Nice, okay.
Yeah. So good for them. They're making some noise up there. I'm going to go up there and visit them, I think, in like the next week or so.
Oh, okay.
It's still in the construction phase, but I want to know more about this project.
Oh, I mean, let me know. I'd go up there too.
Yeah, for sure. We should go. We should totally go. Like maybe like on a Wednesday or something.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so as you know, Michelle's like Goose Island Clybourne manager. Revolution, she launched as a marketing rep, Virtue Cider, she was there, and now she's doing her own thing on the Northwest side.
Cool.
And she's bringing Haley along for the ride. That ought to be fun. the what is it? The goddess of chaos. I love that.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
So, right on. Oh, finally in news, the good folks at Guinness.
Right, which is I'm out of beer here, which is probably a good sign because we have this other beer, and we're gonna talk about Guinness here.
Yeah. So Guinness. Guinness has a project called the Open Gate Brewery Project, right? And this is like their little development lab where like Harp was invented, right?
Okay.
And this is where all their small batch stuff is. This is like their equivalent of like the Fulton Wood Project for Goose Island.
Okay.
Right. And this is where Milk Stout comes from.
Okay. And yeah, I've heard about the Milk Stout, and this is also where the Goose Island IPA, or not Goose Island. Guinness IPA kind of came
out of? So yeah. The Brewers Project includes like a rye IPA as well as a golden ale.
Okay.
Right? And they were both originally just like, you know, pub favorites, you know. So, yeah, and actually they come out with a variety pack where you can get all three.
Oh,
you
know? Cool.
Yeah. So they're just trying to mix things up a little bit. I mean, you know, the original Guinness is like is worldwide, but there's so many variants on Guinness that are available over there that not here. And then this is a way of just kind of being a little more, remind you that they can do more than a stout.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting. So we got this milk stout we're going to pour it out if you're not watching the video.
We got our
It's not nitro or anything, so no. It's not going to, doesn't have the, what's it called, the widget in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had the, so I went to Guinness. You know, this was a few years back. There's like a group of 12. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the, I had the Guinness IPA. And I had it here, and I just thought it was okay, right? Because, okay. You know, they were using All-American hops. But they had made it over there and brought it over here, you know? But then I had it there, and I was like, oh, dude, the beer that I had is a shell of itself. When you have it there, it was fantastic. So, okay. I don't know. I'm kind of hit and miss with them on their side project stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, so this, the milk stout, it smells like a Guinness.
Yeah.
Like Guinness has a smell that's almost like, I don't want to say gassy, not like farts, but like it smells like
bitter and roasty for sure.
But it smells like a gas, like just like you open a valve to something.
And like not, something like something burnt.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So all Guinness has that smell to me. Like I can just pick it off, and I don't love that smell of Guinness. That
you know what you're getting into, yeah. When you smell that Guinness, yeah.
So sometimes I have to get past because I like Guinness. I have to get past that aroma that maybe turns me off a little bit. That almost feels fake. I want to say
like barley, right? Like maybe it's
like a lot of barley.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. So the milk stout, like what are we getting here? Are we just getting like a sweeter Guinness?
Yeah, we're getting a Guinness with milk sugars added to it, okay. Essentially, right? But yeah, it's the same hop profile, same yeast and same malt bill, from what I can tell. Yeah, and it's just you know, it's light. It's weird because like you can have some beers. Like I thought for me, I thought the Mitten was the same way. Like the Mitten, even though it was a barrel-aged beer, it was kind of oddly refreshing. Because, in the Mitten, they age it for 12 months, but then they add fresh juice to it at the end.
Okay.
So it gives just this kind of a bolder, fresh flavor to it. Mm-hmm. And I think with Guinnesses are the same way, even though it's like dark, you know, and roasty and bitter, you know. It's still like super mellow and almost like, and it's still inviting, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's very, it's nice. There's something about Guinness that always makes me think of sitting by the fire and just kind of warming up. I don't know. There's like a coziness to Guinness that I don't know why, because I haven't had Guinness in that way, but it makes me think of like maybe like Sheffield's like back room where they have the fireplace like hanging out there kind of idea.
No, I know what you mean. It's like a kind of like an all-purpose kind of stout. Yeah.
But I guess I would have to have regular Guinness and the milk stout to really compare the two. I feel like it's thinner than normal Guinness, and less carbonation to it, and so. But I don't mind it.
Yeah, I like how like
billowy and kind of light and fluffy the mouthfeel is. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of dig how like there is like a mild velvet smoothness, a mild like almost cocoa like finish in there, mm-hmm. you know? So I dig that.
And it's nice that like Guinness, the milk stout's only 5%, so you feel like you are having so much beer when it's really like you're not.
And yeah.
That's what's always been deceiving about Guinness is people are like, it's so heavy, but it's not. And it's so boozy, but it's not.
Yeah, I know the original. My favorite Guinness is probably the extra forms, like 7.5, right? Okay. And it plays up a lot of those like dark cherry chocolate notes for me. Mm-hmm. You know, the original Guinness is just kind of more of like a baker's chocolate, kind of a little more on the bitter side and really kind of light for on ABV, but then more filling,
yeah.
You know. And this is kind of somewhere in between the two, I think, you know. Yeah, where it's like it's definitely got a sweeter notes than the original.
No, nice. So, tasty.
Yeah. Oh, so they're opening a brewery in Maryland.
Mm. That's right. There was a reason for us drinking this. It wasn't just, oh, yeah, they got milk stout. We had other news to talk about. A brewery in Maryland.
Yeah, so Guinness, I think the Guinness that comes here is Guinness might possibly be from Canada. I know they've got like 7 official breweries around town, okay. or around the globe, not around town. Yeah, and then they there's 7 official breweries, but then officially licensed spaces is up to like 55.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, so they're all over the place.
So why are we getting a brewery in Maryland? Like why?
That's
why
a good
now?
Question. And it sounds like it's a pretty expensive project. It sounds like it's like a. You know, like a $50 million project, and then it kind of emulates what their destination brewery in Dublin is.
The experience one?
Yeah, huh. The Guinness experience. So apparently they brewed here 63 years ago, which I never knew that.
No.
But it sounds like, they got a warehouse in Maryland, and they're looking to do their thing there. So it's probably to address the issue that we're talking about now. Like, you know, you got American-style beers, but you're making them over there. You know, why not make them here?
Okay.
You know, if you're really trying to evolve and have people, you know, because I mean, Guinness, as far as worldwide impact goes, is probably, you know, it was the biggest beer in the world until like 1930, when you know, Budweiser took over. You know, but it was the first international beer. It's probably the most, you know, it's probably still the most recognizable beer brand on the planet.
Probably,
you know, one out of every 3 beers in Ireland is a Guinness beer. Damn. Sold. Yeah. So yeah, man, this is their way of saying, hey, you know, we were craft before craft.
When's this supposed to open?
Let's see.
Will President Trump take credit for these new beer jobs in America?
Yeah, it says about, creates about 40 jobs. Doesn't really give, like, a launch date.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're looking at it to be like a destination brewery where you can get like 10 million people a year there.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically an American version of the brewery in Ireland.
Okay. In Maryland. That seems like a... Okay. I guess it's probably a good shipping or importing location.
Yeah, Baltimore County. I still associate Guinness. And when you go there, they hate like, you know, car bombs and St. Patty's Day. They hate like the binge drinking aspect of it. You know. And also when you go there, they have really cool like artwork from like the 30s and the 50s or marketing campaigns. Their marketing campaigns, I think, is what put them over the top. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then the beer is consistent, you know, all worldwide.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, they didn't have to also deal with prohibition that many American breweries had to face.
That's a good point. Yeah. So yeah, this is a twist on an old friend.
Yeah, nice. Digging it. So. All right, so we started the show with beer. We're ending with other beer. I like this. Maybe we have to continue this. It just makes for more drunken shows and longer shows. But Nick, where can people find you, get in touch when we're not recording here?
Right on, man. I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRad. Chicago Beer Pass is on Twitter at Chicago Beer Pass. Website, chicagobeerpass.com. All the episodes get posted there. But our Facebook page, that's probably, we're pretty active. I know some people were asking, you posted pictures about the Pseudo Sue, and they were asking about that.
Where do I get it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So check that out. That's probably the place we post the most stuff. And then sometimes we do the live stream, not this week, but other times we do. So check that out. Look for tweets from us when we go live, usually Tuesdays around 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for this week's episode.
Cheers.